Welcome to Gag Me Tick.
You forgot the name of our show.
Gag Me Chainsaw.
We'll get it.
Welcome to Gag Me with a Chainsaw, a horror podcast about 80s slashers. I'm Corey.
And I'm Sarah.
And we love scary movies.
That's what we say.
Yeah?
We never podcast about them anymore.
Oh, it's been a while. But we're back, baby.
Yeah. Where have we been?
Well, busy life things. I had to get my whole house rewired. Yep. So I was out of my house for a while. That was a pain.
That was a pain.
Yep. What about you?
I've been in school. The semester started. And it's consuming my entire life. Because it's math.
Math.
And I'm back on campus for the first time since I started going back to school. And I'm like around other students. And it's been a trip to actually be back in school. Mm-hmm. It's my fourth semester. And I like to be around the kids. Actually, I didn't think I would, but I do. I like to see what they're wearing. And I think they're cute. But they are so weird. And I was like, I want to talk about this on the show. Because like, what if somebody listens to it? But I don't think anybody will. They're so weird.
Yeah, in what ways?
21-year-olds, 22-year-olds are not like they were when I was 21 or 22. I feel like these kids are not interested in being adults.
Hmm.
I'm like, do you even go to the club, bro? I don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
They seem like actual children. And like when I was that age, I was like, I am a grown up, even though I'm not, like my brain wasn't baked or whatever. But, you know, But that's how they seem. I don't get it. There's this one girl in my class who is the most attention-seeking individual I've ever met in my life, and I'm obsessed with her.
Is it the person that always brings animals to class?
Yes! First day, she's got a dog, and she tells our professor, I just want to introduce ourselves. I'm whatever her name is, and this is my dog, generic dog name. And he's not a service dog, technically. I was like, okay, bitch, that's just a dog. He can't pass the part of the test where you're supposed to not eat the snack. He's so fat, he only had to eat the snack. And I was like, I hate her.
Yeah.
Because she's making this little voice, right? And I was like, oh, my God. And I was like throwing vibes to our professor. Like, can you believe this shit? But she's a little older. So, like, she brings this dog sometimes. And it's good, I guess, but like you can hear it shaking, you know, it's got all its tags on and stuff. And then when it shakes, it's like a bunch of noise. And she's kind of rough with it. Like when she moves it around, I'm like, Jesus. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So sometimes this dog comes, right? And she's like, well, it's just for my anxiety. So he'll probably just be here on exam days. But there seems to be no rhyme or reason to when she brings this fucking dog. And so then one day, she starts wearing spurs to class.
Yeah.
Right? Because she just hopped off the fucking back of a bull, a bucking bronco, and came to school, I guess. She was out roping the wind or whatever, and here she is. And I was, like, walking down the hallway to go to class, and she was walking in before me just jingling down the hallway. And I was like, are you fucking for real? You were wearing spurs at 9:15 a.m. You made the choice to wear those.
Yeah. Showing off.
Yeah, showing off. Then I come to class one day and this bitch is holding the fucking baby lamb in an outfit. It was wearing a little diaper and a onesie with a skirt. And oh my gosh. Was like, are you kidding me?
It's not even Easter yet.
And also, who is in charge? What is happening?
Yeah.
Can you do anything you want?
Professor was like, sure.
I don't. Because
she ramped it up little by little.
Little by little. I don't even know, like, if they had a conversation or she just came in carrying the lamb and sat down and he just was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Not worth it, right? And I was like, this is sick.
Did it shit in the classroom?
No. Well, it's wearing a diaper.
Oh, yeah.
But it fucking got away from her because everything gets away from her. And then we're all locked in because it's a lecture day, right? And I'm furiously trying to take notes. And then totally silent room except for our professor and it sounded like a fucking ringtone, startled the whole room. And her lamb had gotten away from her and was like two desks up underneath somebody else's chair. So then there's like this whole scramble to catch the lamb. And I was like, please, I am trying to learn to do this thing that I will never learn, but I'm trying so hard. Every time she leaves the room, she makes such a ruckus. And she leaves the room every single day that she's in class. And she carries like 30 keys and she jingles them all at once. And when she leaves the room, she slides against the wall. So every rivet on her jeans like scrapes the wall.
What is going on?
I don't know. Head? And she always will take a phone call and she will take it right before she leaves the room.
Yeah.
Like hand on the door. Hello, speakerphone. And I'm like, you're almost outside the door. Never, though. She has to answer it inside the room. What is next? What is next?
At this point, I'd believe anything.
Anything.
Like, she's going to carry a horse in.
Yeah. Well, Jason right away clocked her as a horse girl. He was like, she's a horse girl. And like 2 days later, she was telling another classmate, like, oh, well, I have a very expensive habit. And like when somebody says something like that, they want you to ask. Right. And so my other classmate was like, oh, what is it? And she was like, horses. And I was like, oh, my God, Jason was right. So she's a horse girl, but I guess she's a lamb girl and a spur girl. She's wild. She's consuming me. I can't stand her, but I'm obsessed also with like the
what's she
going to
do next? Yeah.
Yes. The sheer balls.
I would die of embarrassment.
Thank
if,
you.
Like, just two of those things happened.
Thank you. If your baby lamb got away from you.
Yeah.
At least I'm not like feeling the need to be drawn into a attention battle with her. Like,
yeah,
there's a time where I might have. It's like there's this other girl in my class and I'm like, oh, she's dressing. Mm-hmm. Right. She wears a little beret or a little cute hat. And I can tell that she thrifts. You know, she wears a lot of funky stuff. And my first instinct was, oh, yeah. Right. Well, let me get my clothes on. But then I was like, no, I don't need to do this, actually.
Nah,
that's maturing. I think. I was like, let her be the fashion girl. I don't need to be fashion girl at 9:30.
Yeah. You're doing it, though. You got a notebook full of math.
This means nothing. Means absolutely nothing. Got a 34 out of 200 on my first exam and didn't even feel anything about it. I knew it was going to be something like that. And I just laughed. What can I do?
Can only go up from here.
You would think. Things are going to get harder and it can't go down.
You can update us next episode.
Okay. Send me good vibes. Don't tell me to go to Khan Academy because I'm already trying. What else? Do we have anything else going on? When was our last episode? We've been gone a long time.
So our last like slasher episode, I feel, was December.
Was it Christmas?
Yeah.
What was it?
It was Christmas Evil.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. Great movie.
Gosh. We've had New Year's since then. And Valentine's Day.
I know. We tried to get a Valentine's Day episode in time, but it just did not happen.
It did not happen.
I'm sorry. We still love you, though.
I had too many equations to do. We do still love you. I hope you missed us.
And we're back with the banger.
Yeah. Well.
Well, we haven't talked about our thoughts on the movie, so we'll find out. So every episode, we pick a movie from the Letterboxd list, Every 80 Slasher, An Attempt by John Hillman. And this week, I chose the movie.
Uh-huh.
And I went with a fave because I didn't have a lot of time. And I was like, I've seen this movie.
Smart.
Probably 5 times. So, you know, I can just watch it and take notes.
Yeah.
And I chose The Prowler from 1981.
All right.
1981, they were pumping out slashers.
Seriously.
There's like almost 30 slashers from that year.
Holy cow. And also, I was born.
And also... Sarah was born. Good
yeah,
year.
It was a big year. Lots of stuff being pumped out that year.
Yeah. So this is an American slasher film directed by Joseph Zito and written by Neil Barbera. Yes, relation to Hanna-Barbera.
Really?
Fame. Yeah. That was his dad. Glenn Leopold and Eric Lewald. This movie stars Vicki Dawson as Pam McDonald. I did not recognize her. She did some TV work and a few movies in the 70s, and then looks like she took a big break until 2019. Since then, she's done a lot of shorts, which I thought was interesting.
That is interesting. How does that happen?
I don't know. It also stars Christopher Gautman as Deputy Mark London. He was on the TV shows The Edge of the Night and Texas.
Okay.
He also is a soap opera guy. He directed 72 episodes of All of My Children in the 80s and 90s, and then he produced As the World Turns from 1999 to 2010.
Wow.
Fun. Also stars Lawrence Tierney as Major Chatham.
Chatham.
He has over 100 acting credits, including Bodyguard from 1947, Dillinger from 1945, and Reservoir Dogs.
Oh. I was like, The Bodyguard?
Yeah.
Starring Whitney Houston?
No. Farley Granger plays Sheriff George Frazier, and he's in some Hitchcock movies, Strangers on a Train, and Rope. And They Live by Night. And, of course, one thing that makes this movie great, our boy Tom Savini did the special effects makeup. Each setup typically took a whole day.
I believe it.
And he played the Prowler in all the death scenes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
This was his first time working with director Joseph Zito, but they would go on to do other films together, including Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter.
Dope. And he really was working.
Yeah.
On effects in this movie.
And so this was your first time watching this?
Yeah. I hadn't seen it before.
Okay. I'm excited. We'll see what you think.
Was it an easy watch for you like you hoped?
Yep.
Good.
Yep. Every time I watch this, I'm like, yeah, I like this one.
Good.
Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
Okay. So I like the beginning of this movie.
I hope we remember how to do this.
I'm sure we'll mess up a few times.
Oh, no.
Be patient with us.
Yeah. Partner at dust.
So we start with some old-timey newsreel footage that shows the victorious U.S. troops returning from Europe on board the Queen Mary after World War II.
It's like news on the march.
Yeah, and they got a guy that like really used to do that.
Oh, so yeah, cool. You can tell.
For some, the psychological victims of the war, it will be a long road back, especially for those who received a Dear John letter from their unloyal sweethearts. Welcome back, boys. Let dancing replace marching.
Nobody ever, this was all like word for word from the little newsreel thing. Nobody ever mentioned the psychological victims of war until after 1972.
Like, yeah, they didn't know yet.
Yeah, these guys just all came home and cheated on your grandmas.
Cut to, in a letter dated March 12, 1944, a woman named Rosemary writes that she can no longer wait for her GI lover abroad. She tells him that she's young and she has to live her life now. She adds that perhaps they can be friends upon his return. Honestly, she's being very sensible. Yeah, what is she, like 20?
I agree. And they're not married.
No.
Way more sensible than like the cunty way that she signs her name would suggest.
Oh, I love it.
I know. It's Rosemary and the Y. She like does the last side of the Y up all long and then draws a rose on it.
Yeah.
All that extra work, right? Mm-hmm. You have to sign a document and you're like, hold on. Gotta draw the little leaf.
Yeah. Cut to June 28th, 1945. The small seaside town of Avalon Bay, which is actually Cape May, New Jersey, where they filmed, is hosting a graduation dance. Rosemary is attending with her new rich jerk of a boyfriend, Roy.
Every moment they were at this party was inscrutable and surreal to me. I could not tell you why. I watched this scene 3 times and I could never tell what was happening.
What?
I don't get it. I don't know. It just seemed like things were just happening without any connection, basically. Okay. I don't know.
There was a very weird scene where somebody interacts with Rosemary, but you don't see the person and you don't even understand how this person could be in the scene.
Okay, thank you.
Because I watched that scene twice because I'm like, wait, do they show this guy?
Yeah.
It's like a red herring type of thing, but yeah, didn't make sense. So Roy convinces Rosemary that they should go off by themselves and they drive to a lake where they spend some romantic time together in a gazebo. The scene is brightly lit with lots of pretty strong lights until someone approaches the couple and cuts the power. The audience can see that the stranger is wearing full combat gear and carrying a pitchfork. Roy is not concerned. He's trying to get lucky.
Mm-mm.
Rosemary is worried someone will see them, but Roy tells her that she doesn't even have to take her dress off.
Objection overruled.
As Rosemary and Roy embrace, she looks up and sees hovering above her a man with a pitchfork. Rosemary screams and the stranger plunges it through both of them.
I like that. Like there was supposed to be that scene in My Bloody Valentine that showed, I forget which couple, but like impaled together and they had to cut it because it was too gross. So I like that.
I feel like this movie has a lot of parallels to My Bloody Valentine. Yeah. The killer then leaves a long stemmed red rose in the dead woman's hand.
He steps on the pitchfork to push it through extra hard, and that's some nasty work, Prowler. I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Cut again. Cut to our title. It's pretty simple. The Prowler in all caps, red letters on a black background. Gets you in, gets you out.
Yeah.
Cut to again, Avalon Bay. They're jerking us all over the place here.
Yeah.
Just flying through the years. Avalon Bay, June 28th, 1980. It's 35 years later, and the town is preparing for its graduation dance once again. There hasn't been one since that fateful night, but what could possibly go wrong? Two co-eds are hanging a banner when Deputy Mark London arrives and makes some flirty remarks. A spunky blonde named Pam arrives, and she teases Mark, and he invites her to lunch. But first, they stop by the station where Pam discusses the dance with Sheriff George Frazier. She says that they haven't had the dance since 1945 because Major Chatham, a reclusive World War II veteran, refused to allow the annual celebrations after his daughter and her boyfriend were murdered all those years ago.
I'm like, this information is all for us. He knows this.
Yeah. And also, why is this guy in charge of who gets to have a party?
He caused a fuss. He's like, you can't.
They're just like, we just want to be sensitive.
He said too soon.
Sheriff Frazier, who is all set to leave town for his annual fishing trip the next day, casually mentions that someone robbed a store in the nearby town of Columbus, then killed a young man and took off in his car. What's more, the authorities think he is headed towards Avalon. Mark seems truly concerned that the sheriff is still planning to go on his trip when there's a dangerous killer on the loose, but Sheriff Frazier brushes him off, saying, "Now I can't start the summer without fishing. You know that. I never could." Don't act so brand new, Mark. You know this.
Reminds me of King of the Hill. You knew that when you married
me. Yes. Besides, he's confident Mark can handle anything that might come along. Before he leaves, he does take a moment to seriously remind Mark that some people in town still don't go in for the unruly antics of the college kids, and that it might be an issue that comes up. He says it all like serious, like, but you do know, right? Pam and Mark go on their lunch date. She shows him an article she wrote about the return of the graduation dance.
I guess opposites really attract. Pam is a real go-getter. Mm-hmm. But Mark, you could tell he'd rather coast along doing as little work as possible.
Yeah, he likes to be little sheriff.
Yeah.
She asks him to stop by the dance that night if he can and tells him to be careful. Before Sheriff Frazier takes off, he stops by a convenience store owned by Pat Kingsley. One of the employees at the store is Otto, a tall man that seems to have an intellectual disability as well as a distaste for the sheriff. This Pat Kingsley character is like if we were seeing an earlier, less spooky job off the resume of Captain Spaulding from House of a Thousand Corpses, right?
Yeah.
Like, I want this actor to be Sid Haig so bad. He looks like him. He should just be him.
That would have been cool.
It would have been way better. I mean, this guy did a great job, but that's totally what it reminded me
of. No shade.
Yeah. A little later, Pam tells her roommate, Sherry. I always want to go, Sherry, baby.
Sherry.
Sherry, baby. You're supposed to go,
Sherry, baby. Come on tonight.
See, look at us. Our harmonies are all out of whack. God. All right.
So sorry, listeners. We know you love it when we sing.
I know. And our voices are good, too. Pam tells her roommate, Sherry Baby, that she's worried about Mark and the Columbus killer. Sherry tries to calm her friend's nerves while the other girls in the dormitory are excitedly preparing for the dance. I love scenes like this.
Yeah.
Anytime we're watching a movie that has like a bunch of girls in a dorm or a school or whatever, and they're all getting ready, I just think it's so cute. What everybody's doing.
Do you love getting ready?
I love getting ready.
If I have time. I don't like rushing.
I don't like rushing either. I love to take hours to get ready. Yeah. Like literally hours.
Make a drink, listen to some music.
Yeah, sit at my vanity for a long time.
Mess up my eyeliner five times.
I was just going to say that! Put on one eye and be like, no, I don't like this. I have to take it off and start over. Yeah, I do like getting ready. It is fun to get ready with friends. But like at this point in my life, it doesn't come up that often.
Yeah, unless you're like staying in a hotel.
Yeah.
And then it's cramped.
Yeah. There's always one person sitting on the floor in front of the mirror. That's a chaotic way to do your makeup.
Yeah.
But I do
that's
like it.
That's the pro. That's the one that's like, I could do my makeup in the car.
Yeah, totally.
That's not me.
I can. I like it. You can really spread out down there on the floor. But then you have to get up. So Lisa, the wild one, she even flashes Major Chatham, who's sitting in his wheelchair in the house across from them. She's like, they're like, oh, we need to be respectful of him. And she's like, whatever, and shows her tits. As Pam is putting the finishing touches on her outfit, someone else is also getting ready. But this person is putting on a military combat uniform, complete with a bayonet, hunting knife, and a sawed-off double-barreled 12-gauge shotgun. Before Pam heads out, she asks Sherry, who's in the shower, if she should wait for her. Sherry tells her to go ahead and leave. She's waiting for her boyfriend, Carl. When Carl shows up, he decides to surprise Sherry in the shower. Hoping to have a little fun before they leave, he goes into the bedroom to undress. She's like, well, he's like, oh, I thought you were going to be ready. And she was like, well, do you want to come in? And he goes, sure. She says, how fast can you get your clothes off? And he was like, start the stopwatch, coach, and like starts kicking his shoes off. They've got a little dynamic going on, mm-hmm. but he seems like an asshole. Anybody named boyfriend Carl, sorry if that's your name, but he's undressing when suddenly an intruder grabs him from behind and plunges a bayonet through the top of his head until the other end comes out of his neck. It's crazy. The force is so great that the victim's eyes bulge and roll back in his head. The special effects in this movie are really fantastic.
Yeah.
Sherry is still in the shower when she sees someone through the curtain approaching. She thinks Carl is back until the killer, wearing a military helmet and a gas mask covering his face, pulls the curtain open. As Sherry screams, he plunges a pitchfork under her breasts. He then lifts her up against the mint green tile as he sticks the pitchfork in further, killing her.
Yeah, we should mention that Sherry has short blonde hair, and this whole scene is very psycho, but way more graphic.
Oh, yeah. I clocked it the second she got in the shower, and it was an overhead shot of the water hitting her. It was a cute little reference. Like, yeah. Basically, every time that we saw her in the shower, it was almost a one-to-one shot of mm-hmm. the shower scene in Hitchcock, except for she does show tits.
Totally. Lots of tits and lots of blood.
We always say that's where Hitchcock went wrong. Didn't show nip.
Yeah. So at the graduation dance, the crowd is slow dancing to a rock ballad being played by a live band. I tried to look up this band. I could not find the info.
They look just like every band that you ever see playing on TV at a dance.
Sarah, have you ever been to a formal dance with a live band?
I mean, I've been to weddings and quinceañeras, but it's different, I guess.
Yeah.
I've never been to a formal anything. I mean, I went to that gala.
It'd be fun.
Yeah.
To see like a... I haven't even seen a lot. I've seen like... a few at weddings, but mostly it's they're playing like Mexican music, not yeah. really like a rock band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pam is happy to see Mark when he arrives, but before she can talk to him, Lisa, the wild one, pulls him away to dance to a more up-tempo song. Pam continues to serve the guests drinks from the spiked punch bowl, frustrated and annoyed. They make eye contact and Mark kind of shrugs and acts like there's nothing he can do, but he can see he totally loves
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he fucking loves it for sure. He's like, you know what my job entailed when I took my oath? I have to serve and protect at this dance. And yeah. that includes dancing with your fucking flirty friend.
Yeah. When Mark comes over to talk to her, Lisa follows him. Tipsy from the alcohol, Lisa bumps into Mark and he spills red punch on Pam's like baby pink dress. Pam is big mad and she heads back to the dorm to change her outfit.
Lisa is being such a dick.
Yeah.
She's not being a good friend. She's like, oh, whoops.
Yeah. And she's there with the date too.
Mm-hmm. More attention seeking behavior.
When Pam gets to her room, she hears the shower running. Thinking that Sherry is in the shower with Carl, she closes the door to give them some privacy.
She's not like, oh my God, they've been in the shower for like 3 fucking hours.
Yeah.
Right? Because like the whole time she's been gone at the dance, they're still in the shower. She was in the shower before they left.
Yeah, not sustainable. Don't do that, guys.
No, that's how come we don't have water now.
She doesn't see Carl's blood on the bed, so she quickly changes into her backup dress and then leaves. It's just like hanging there. But as she's going down the stairs, she hears something. Pam looks up at the top of the stairs and sees a dark figure that looks like a GI wearing a gas mask. She becomes frightened and runs through the dorm, trying various locked doors before finally making it outside at the nick of time. As she's running away from the dorm, Major Chatham stops her by tightly grabbing onto her arm. He's wearing fancy pajamas and black gloves, so you know he's a mm-hmm. suspect.
He's got OJ gloves. And I know I'm suspicious.
Pam struggles, breaks free, and runs until she literally runs right into Mark.
Which would usually make him a suspect, too, but he has a pretty solid alibi of flirting on the job from when he was at the dance protecting and serving. Because I guess literally nothing else in town needs attention.
No.
Besides this party, 911 is ringing off the hook in the empty station right now.
When she tells him that someone has been chasing her, he takes his flashlight and searches around the dorm. The killer sees Mark, but Mark does not see the killer. Mark discovers Pam's purse, some wheelchair marks, and boot tracks before returning to his car where Pam is waiting for him.
That's fucking crack police work there. Like, I found some wheelchair marks.
She tells him to check the dorm because Sherry and Carl are still inside. Mark checks the bedroom, but the door is locked. He does not see that there are two dead bodies in the tub.
Okay, I guess it doesn't matter if he looks into the other emergencies in town. He's not very good.
Pam and Mark decide to go to Major Chatham's house and see what's up. Inside, it's dark and the old man is nowhere to be found. But the killer is in the house and he watches them silently. During their search, Pam finds an old scrapbook and discovers that Chatham's dead daughter's middle name was Rosemary.
All this focusing on the rose part of the name Rosemary feels like stolen valor. You're an herb, bitch. An aromatic, even. Just embrace it.
And it's her middle name.
Yes.
Since Mark is unfazed by this news, Pam realizes he didn't even read her article about the original murders and says, maybe we should call the sheriff. Boom. Got that fool.
Got him.
He's all hurt, too.
I know. Oh.
And she's like, sorry.
But I'm the sheriff right now. Left me in charge. But I don't understand, Court. Is this the same girl that got killed?
Yes.
But why is that a whole... Why is that...
I don't know. I thought they realized that earlier, but they make it seem like a revelation in this scene.
Yeah.
Because he's like... They said earlier that he didn't want the dance to go on because his daughter was killed.
Yes. So...
They're just putting it together.
She's like, oh my God, Rosemary was her middle name. That's what it is. The big revelation is that Rosemary was a liar.
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay. So it's not just me.
Especially if you wrote a whole article about it. Yeah. Like, you should have figured that out already.
Yeah. Okay, fourth column. So the two go back to the dance where they tell the chaperone, Miss Allison, about the prowler on campus. She interrupts the band to make an announcement that everyone should stay inside the building until the person has been apprehended. Everybody, please continue to party. It is vitally important that you keep partying. But the message comes too late for Lisa. Angry that her date, Paul, has been puking in the bathroom, Paul is fucked up. Everybody's like, are you okay? He's like, yeah, I just got to finish up and get back out there. She shows her tits. Lisa's gone to the pool for a late night swim in her underwear. Of course she does.
She had to cool down.
Yeah. After a few quick dips, Lisa ascends the stairs of the pool to go back to the party. But the killer is standing above her and kicks her in the fucking face.
Yeah.
Shocked by the attack. I was shocked as well. Lisa tries to swim away, but is unable to get her bearings. The killer then jumps into the pool, comes up from behind her, takes his bayonet, and slices her neck.
This scene is really good special effects. Very brutal.
Yeah.
I liked how they kept cutting between the gore and her bloody body under the water.
Yeah, it's really good. It's shot under the water, backlit by the pool light. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's pretty cool. Then when her body, like, slips under the water, her neck wound starts to bubble, like oxygen's escaping. It's a very excellent touch. Paul wants to leave the dance and find Lisa, but the teachers won't let him. He's being forced to party, mandated. He's so drunk and rowdy that he gets thrown out. So if he wants to leave, they say no.
Yeah.
But if he's being bad, they're kicking him out because mm-hmm. they're like, take your chances with the murderer.
Yeah.
It's your punishment. Everyone keeps threatening to call the real sheriff, but they can't. They know they can't. He's gone fishing. It's just petty aggression towards Mark, which I fully support.
Yeah. He deserves it.
Yeah. Mark and Pam take Paul to the police station where Mark puts him in a jail cell. What's he under arrest for?
Drunk and disorderly.
Okay. When Miss Allison finds out Lisa's at the pool, she decides she must go get her.
Yeah, it's her duty as a chaperone after all.
El Chaperono, they call her. I said, that is La Chaperona. When she gets to the pool, she sees bloody water and panics. As she tries to run away, the killer grabs her and thrusts the bayonet into her neck. Blood drips all over her pantyhose and open-toed shoes. Corey, I swear this podcast has made us watch so many scenes of blood dripping onto pumps.
Yeah, it's going to become our fetish.
That's how it happens. One day we're just going to be like, say. The audience assumes the carnage is going to continue back at the dance when another couple goes into the basement to bone, but they only get peeped on by the red herring groundskeeper.
All right. Who says you have to be a virgin to survive these movies?
Store owner Mr. Kingsley arrives at the station. He's pissed the deputy is doing such a shitty job at maintaining order. He tells Mark that the cemetery gate is wide open when it's supposed to be locked. He's like, don't make me paddle a canoe out and get the sheriff. Mark and Pam head out to see what's happened. When they get there, Mark finds Rosemary Chatham's grave dug up. They're like, Rosemary Chatham, who's that?
No, I think her name is like crossed out. They're like, who could it be?
Yeah. It's Ebenezer Scrooge. Anytime you see an unknown grave, that's who it is. Mark is about to open up the coffin when he hears Pam scream. Pam, who's been waiting in the car, has just been startled by Otto, the clerk from the convenience store, at the window. They return to the grave, open the coffin, and discover Lisa's body inside. I always get got when they open coffins in movies. Like, what's going to be in there?
Yeah. The director was really embarrassed about this prop, the gravestone.
Uh-huh.
And also, I think, like, the book or something in the house. But he was like, did not even want it to come out on Blu-ray because he's like, oh, it's going to look so bad.
And it does.
It looks like when you look for it, you're like, yeah, that's fake.
I wasn't even looking for it. I just was like, whoa, that's styrofoam.
Yeah. So Mark tries to reach Sheriff Prazer at the lodge he's staying at, but he can't get in touch with him when the lazy front desk clerk claims that the sheriff is not there without even checking. He like pretends to check.
Yeah.
Doesn't go. This guy likes to work even less than Mark does.
Mark has met his match.
Mark decides that things are serious enough to call the state police, and they say that they will be there in less than half an hour. He also learns that the Columbus killer was caught hours ago, so he couldn't have been the one who killed Lisa.
Uh-oh.
Pam thinks she's cracked the case. She says the same person who's killed Rose Chatham must have killed her frenemy, Lisa. Before heading back to Major Chatham's house, Mark tries to drop Pam off at the dance, but she's like, uh-uh, I'm going with you.
Yeah, she tells him, fine, why don't you just go and play sheriff? It's like, geez, everyone knows this guy's insecurity, and they all are just pushing that button all the time.
I mean, it's his own fault. When they get to Major Chatham's house, Mark goes upstairs and is soon knocked unconscious by the killer.
Everyone was right about him.
Pam sees a red rose on the mantle, and then she spies a necklace dangling from inside the fireplace. She tugs at the necklace, and Rosemary's skeleton falls out of the chimney, still wearing her dress from the graduation dance. Huh. Pam tries to find Mark, but is confronted by the killer, who presents her with a flower and says, I'm here for our date, Rose.
It's like a weird mechanical voice or something.
She runs through the house trying to get away and eventually hides under a bed in a room full of furniture covered with sheets. Classic.
Classic.
The madman enters the room and starts breaking shit with his pitchfork.
Oh, yeah. He's stabbing everything.
Pam makes every attempt to be still and quiet, even as a rat crawls right up to her.
She's brave.
Finally, Pam gets up and runs out of the room. She manages to get the pitchfork away from the killer and holds it up for her protection as he comes near her.
She, like, doesn't she, like, bust it off? He sticks it through a door, and she busts off the end of the pitchfork.
I can't remember.
That's what happened. And I just was thinking, it's so weird the Army was giving out standard issue pitchforks at the time. It's like anything to assist the Allied forces.
Yeah. Just then, Otto enters the room and shoots the prowler with his hunting rifle.
Okay, Boo Radley.
Exactly. Otto and Pam have a sweet little moment as they smile at each other, but it doesn't last long.
Doesn't last long. This goes on for so fucking long. I was like, why do we keep cutting back and forth between their faces? What is happening? Are they falling in love? And nobody says anything. They just have this like mindless fucking telekinetic conversation.
A few seconds later, the killer takes out his double-barreled shotgun and shoots Otto in the chest, killing him dead.
Mm.
Pam stabs the prowler in the back with the pitchfork, and they fight for the shotgun. Struggling to breathe, the wounded murderer pulls his mask off, and Pam is horrified to see who it is. It's been Sheriff Frazier all along.
I knew it.
You did?
Yes.
I feel like I didn't know it the first time I watched it.
I knew it.
Pam gets the upper hand, points the shotgun at his head, and fires, exploding it to fucking smithereens.
Smithereens, dude. Smithereens, like scanners.
Yeah.
The next morning, Mark drops Pam off at the dorm. Pan.
Pan Am.
The next morning, Mark drops Pam off at the dorm. She goes into her room and is surprised to hear the shower still running. She's like, damn, this bitch is a fucking raisin. She's a prune. She enters the bathroom and is shocked when she sees Sherry's body still on the floor of the tub and Carl's corpse hanging from the shower head by his necktie. Suddenly, Carl's corpse reaches out to grab her. Pam screams and backs away. When she looks back, Carl is lifeless once again and the screen cuts to black. The end.
The end.
What?
How do you interpret this ending?
What the hell is this? Is this about PTSD? What the fuck is this ending?
Yeah, I think so. Like, there's no way he just drops her back off at the dorm, right? Like, that scene where he's driving her, I'm like, this can't be real.
I think he does because he's just bad.
Yeah.
He's just not good at his job. And that's how come he never found them up there.
I don't know.
Also... okay, it's the sheriff. Why? Is he the boyfriend?
He's the boyfriend.
But they don't tell you that.
It's assumed.
Ugh.
Yeah, she broke up with him. He killed her.
So you have this one thing at the beginning where she writes the letter, and then you have, oh, he's the killer at the end. But there's no connecting piece that tells me that this is this guy. There's nothing I can look back on and be like, oh, right, he's that guy.
Yeah, they could have done a better job at that.
It just seems so fucking random. Mm-hmm. Like, there was like four people that they could have had be the killer. And they were like, and it was Sheriff Frazier. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was like, okay.
I thought he just really liked fishing.
I mean, maybe he does. Every other year, he's just gone fishing. Uh-huh. Why this year? Because they're having the party.
Yeah, he got triggered.
He's triggered.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. Okay. So I like the soundtrack a lot.
Yeah.
The soundtrack is awesome. There's a lot of really cool shit in the soundtrack. Lots of cool cues, lots of like interesting fucking embellishments. It's pretty cool. When you notice it and you're like, damn, that's dope. Like, it's good, right? Mm-hmm. The third act really picked up for me, but then it ended so abruptly. I was like, huh? Mm-hmm. I don't like this movie, Corey.
Sarah.
I'm so sorry. I tried to watch it so many fucking times. I tried to watch it two times before I had to finally sit down and watch it for notes, and I could not get through it both times.
Wow.
I was literally, Jason, on the second time I was watching it, he goes, are you just looking at this and not watching it? And I was like, yes.
It's not connecting with you.
It wasn't. Here's what I think the problem is. We don't watch these movies chronologically.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very, like, all the tropes are here.
Yeah.
So, but it came kind of early, though.
Yeah.
In the whole grand scheme of things. However, because we watched the movies all fucking mixed up, which is cool. It's fine. It just seems like, okay, more of this. Even though it was like earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I just was like, oh my God, I'm so bored with this.
I like it. I like the beginning, like how it's set in the 40s and then switches. I like the dance. That's fun. I do feel like when they're figuring things out in the middle, it gets a little bit slow.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of always like drift out of it. I feel like when I'm not paying attention as much.
Yeah.
But like we've said, the effects are great.
The special effects are fucking great.
I like the characters. Like, I like the main girl. She's very proactive. I don't know.
To me, she just seems like every other girl that we see in this role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With an incompetent boyfriend, usually.
Yeah, but I liked that she puts him in his place a lot.
Everybody's putting him in his place. Everybody hates this guy, the whole town. They were like, we didn't vote for him. We voted for Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Uh, Yeah, I felt really bad because I was like, oh man, Corey really likes this movie and I'm going to have it's to be okay. like, I don't like
it. We haven't
it.
Had a big split in a long time. I don't think.
I tried. I really tried hard. Honestly, I tried hard. Three times I was watching this movie.
Okay, well, it was not a major commercial success. It grossed less than $1 million. I mean, it had a lot of competition.
Yeah.
28 other slashers, yeah. Right? Some international territories, it was released under an alternate title, Rosemary's Killer.
Okay.
And that version cut out a lot of the graphic murder sequences. Oh. So that would not be good.
No.
It kind of received mixed reviews from critics, but developed a cult following in the years after its release, with praise aimed at its hard-edged violence, as well as the atmosphere.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good atmosphere.
I guess soundtrack contributes towards atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. The film has also been compared by a number of critics to another slasher film of the same year with a similar plot, My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah.
Which I like both. I used to actually like this one more. And then when we rewatched mm-hmm. My Bloody Valentine for the show, I was like, oh, I like it a lot better this time.
I like My Bloody Valentine a lot more. Even though it does have some also like inscrutable elements, mm-hmm. I feel like it is put together a lot better, a lot more coherently.
Okay,
wasn't for me.
Well, you want to rate it?
Well, let's hear our reviews.
Okay,
I have Malton. Lenny got on it.
Yay,
he and I are on the same page.
Wow.
1.5 stars out of 4. World War II veteran kills ex-girlfriend and her new amour with a pitchfork, then suddenly resumes his murderous ways 35 years later. Illogically plotted with gruesome special effects by Tom Savini. Illogically plotted. Yes.
I don't think it's illogically plotted.
We just talked about how it is.
It's just they should give us more. Like, they should give us more motivation for the killer.
He's been mad all this time about this one thing, and yeah. now he's killing other people because of it. It doesn't make any fucking sense. Stephen M. Dusner, Washington Post. The Prowler is a war movie reimagined as a slasher fic. And its message is clear. Take your military heroes for granted and they will come back and kill you. What? Okay, respect the troops.
Yeah.
Damn. For all its boldness of concept and carnage, The Prowler is never entirely satisfying. There are too many missed opportunities to transcend the genre schlock. Too many passages where nothing happens. Too many scares that fall flat. Do you want to hear Video Hounds? Even though, didn't we decide that we were dropping them, that we hate them?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear it anyways?
I'm sure they hated it.
1 out of 4 bones.
They don't like anything.
Well, they're dogs.
I'd rather go chase a ball.
Yeah. Show them a movie of other dogs' buttholes and they'd be like, fucking 4 stars. 4 bones. A soldier returns from duty during World War II, only to find his girl in bed with another guy. He kills them and, for unclear reasons, returns to the same town 35 years later to kill more people. An effects fest for Tom Savini.
Well, I got to stick up for this movie because Vulture did a list. They ranked the 29 slasher films that came out this year. Mm-hmm. Guess which number this got?
6.
Very close. Got 7.
Damn, Corey, I never get close on that kind of thing.
Yeah, number 7 says, overlooked, giving its similarities to My Bloody Valentine, The Prowler warrants attention for its juicy, blood-soaked kills. 35 years after he murders his girlfriend, a World War II vet returns and hacks up unsuspecting group of teens. Joseph Zito brings the same sharp eye for the visuals that he would later bring to Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, imbuing shots with great setups and dedicating time to lavishly executed kills. A pitchfork to the stomach. One particularly gruesome end is brought to life by Tom Savini, whose skills are what make this stellar body count movie. A head exploded by a shotgun is a showy false ending that leads to the true last shot, which apes Carrie as a zombified corpse. Hunk reaches for the final girl.
I feel like there could have been more satisfying...
Just one scene like that gave us a little more info about our killer.
I was gonna say, how do I even know that this guy was a fucking World War II veteran? I'm just supposed to assume because he's old that's you know what I mean?
Like, I wonder if there's like any details in his office that we
look behind him.
Yeah,
there could have been more, like a killer that made more sense and they definitely could have like helped me understand why. And it just, like I said, it's so fucking abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, Sheriff Frazier, the end. I was like, okay, that's it then. So he's not going fishing this year?
No.
Oh,
sad. Or maybe he did. Maybe he got his fishing and trip in too. You do that at weird hours of the night.
He was so planning to go. Yeah. The front office guy said they were fishing for crappy. I would not want to eat a fish called that. Okay. Now what?
Now we got to rate it. I wonder if this is going to be it.
What do
our
we
biggest
rate them?
Split.
I forget.
1 to 10.
1 to 10.
Sarah.
Sorry. I have so many numbers floating around in my head core.
Well, we guessed it on another podcast, the podcast that wouldn't die,
yeah,
that will be coming out soon. And they did out of 5. So maybe that's why you got confused.
Maybe. I'm sure that's it. Out of 10.
Be honest. Don't try to spare my feelings.
And you know, I love you so much.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to give it a 5.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Because it's like just pretty standard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing. The Savini effects are really every point that this is getting.
Okay.
If I'm basing it purely on special effects, it's a 10. But then you have to add in everything else and average it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a 5. I almost said 4. I was so bored. Like I said, that one scene at that party at the beginning, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
I don't know. The edits were weird or something. I didn't get it. And I thought, I'm just tired. I was just stoned. I'll try
again.
No,
you were right about that one part. It's very odd the way they didn't show the guy that they were pretending
things
bumped
were
into
just
Rosemary.
Weird. It was so weird. Yeah, that's where I go.
Okay.
What do you say?
I say 8.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Why? Why do you like it so much?
I don't know. I always have fun watching it. Like, I like the dance. I like the characters. They're fun to me. Like you said, the score, the special effects. It is like kind of tense. It's not super scary.
No.
But there are moments.
Sure. The kills are really brutal. Stuff happens where you're like, geez, like mm-hmm. when he does kick her in the face and shit like that.
You know, I like a whodunit.
Yeah.
But it could have been a little bit better. I agree.
I knew who it was. I kind of wanted it to be the old man. And I was like, maybe I'll be the boyfriend. It's always fun with the boyfriend. But then I was like, it's the fucking sheriff. Nobody knows where he is. Like, I just felt like it was so easy.
Yeah, they could have also made the deputy more of a suspect.
Yeah.
But the way they like shot the killer and him in the same scenes,
yeah,
you're like, okay, obviously not him.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like when she bumped into him, you know, that's something that you see a lot where mm-hmm. like, oh, now suddenly he's here too. Like, but they were showing the other guy that they killed at the same time. So you're like, okay, well, it's not him. Like, it just leaves you with no like tension over who it is, I guess, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody that you could suspect that it could be is always shown also not being the killer. So you're just like, okay, so it's just a random person that we're like, who is that?
Well, they did have the red herring of like the groundskeeper guy, but he wasn't enough to make us think.
I never even considered him as a red herring because he wasn't even enough of a presence for me to be like, maybe it's this guy.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that guy, Corey.
That's the guy that they didn't show in that scene that confused
okay.
you. And then he was the one peeping on the couple.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I like it.
That's okay.
It's fun. For me.
That's
and
good.
Also, it's kind of ambitious. Like, they went with the different time periods. And
yeah.
It's just a little different.
Yeah. That's true. But it is also very formulaic.
It's classy.
Okay.
It's classy film.
Oh. Pinky's up.
Okay, a big split on this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look at our scores and be like, is this our biggest split?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. I feel like we're pretty split on The Hitcher as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because I liked it way more than you.
Oh, and I had so many jokes about The Hitcher.
feel like looking back at
it. I kind of do. Honestly, I have fond feelings for that movie. Pretty fun.
Yeah.
I like My Bloody Valentine a lot more. None of these characters in this movie are ever even Lowly Worm. And our favorite guy from Hollis? My Bloody Valentine, yes, is the voice of Lowly Worm. None of these people are even Lowly Worm.
Hollis and TJ are two beefcakes.
Yeah. Like, bro, do you even Lowly Worm? Do you even drive a little apple? No, you don't. You just be bad at being sheriff.
Yeah, this guy, he's like kind of cute.
No, he's not.
No.
He's, oh he's my
cute. God. He's kind of cute, but then I just don't like him. Because he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, he sucks.
He's kind of a jerk, but he like acts like he's not.
Yeah.
And then he'll like apologize.
He's boring.
He is pretty boring.
His worst offense is how boring he is, honestly. And I think he's not cute. No. He is ugh.
I don't think he's ugly. I don't think anybody's ugly, though. You know me.
You say that. You never think anybody's ugly. That's not true. We found an ugly person. I know we did on the show.
Oh, definitely. But it's rare. Usually I'm like, not cute, not ugly. They're just in the middle.
Just there.
I'm just waiting for your personality to show
you
through.
You can see the good in everybody. Not me.
That dog from, what was the movie that came out this year or last year? The Argentinian film.
What?
You had it on your top three movies.
Oh, Where Evil Lurks? Or
Where Evil Lurks. Yeah. That dog was fucking ugly.
That dog was ugly.
I'll say it. I said it.
Whoa. Whoa, Corey.
That's the last ugly thing I remember.
Okay. Well, for me, it was Mark. What now? I forget how we do our show.
Well, what movie are we talking about next, Sarah? I actually don't know. You have not told me.
I have a system. I couldn't pick. I have.
Oh, that's why you have a hat.
I have in my hat right here, and it's not a top hat. It's one of Jason's hats. So it's huge. I have 6 movies.
Oh my gosh.
That I was like, this could be fun. Okay.
I'm excited.
A couple of them aren't bouncing. I have to get them all bouncing. Do you want to pick?
No, you pick because it's your pick.
Okay. I was so scared. What if I get one that I'm like, no, that's not what I wanted.
Why'd you put it in the hat?
Sometimes I have to make a choice to know what I want. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, I picked one. Are you ready?
Ready.
What if it's a fortune? Just dead. They're a bunch of little folded up pieces of paper. Soul Survivor.
What is this?
This is a Final Destination-like movie. We have it. It's about somebody who survives a plane crash.
I've heard of this. I've heard it's really good.
It is Soul Survivor.
Okay, excited.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what year. I just picked up my calculator instead of my phone. Type it all in. All right, Soul Survivor is from 1984.
Ooh, I kind of thought it was going to be later.
Yeah. All right, hell yeah.
Who's in it?
I was just looking. It's like nobody that you would be like, oh yeah, Anita Skinner.
Okay.
Kurt Johnson. Yeah. Yep. Soul Survivor. And I have seen this movie before.
Ooh.
Okay.
I'm excited to watch
that. That was fun. Now I have my 5 other choices in there.
Yeah. You're ready for a while.
Boy.
The rest of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, as always, please make a donation to the Bakersfield Burrito Project and help us feed our hungry and homeless neighbors here in Bakersfield on Cash App and Venmo at Bako Burrito Project.
And follow us on Instagram at Gag Me With A Chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
Also, please leave us a review or rate us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be nice. We'd love it.
We'd love it.
Yeah.
You can be like, I remember these old gals. They used to do a podcast. You can call us.
Yeah.
661-454-7499. Like I said, just put it in your phone.
Yeah.
Anything you want to tell us, call us up.
Let us know. Who do you agree with? Is the Prowler a 4 or an 8? Or you said 5.
Let us know what you think will be the next baby mammal that this girl in my class will show up with. She's wild. Okay. I feel like we're forgetting something. Is that it?
I think that's it.
So do we say goodbye?
We need to say goodbye.
Okay. We have things to do today.
Yeah.
We are on our Oscars mission where we watch all the Oscar movies.
Hell yeah.
And today we're going to endeavor upon Maestro.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to watch it alone.
It's my last one.
I have still a lot more to watch.
Yeah.
Gotta watch Zone of Interest.
You're ready for that.
All right. Well, let's actually go watch Love is Blind instead.
Okay. Let's watch one episode.
And maybe two episodes. Okay. We'll see you all next time for Soul Survivor.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on Gag Me with a Chainsaw with your hosts, Corey and Sarah. Music by White Bat Audio. Find us on Twitter at Chainsaw Podcast and on Instagram at Gag Me with a Chainsaw. Until next time, unpleasant dreams.